While we wait for that, how many people in the room actively follow APHA on social media? Not bad. Okay, how many plan to start following us after this meeting? There we go, that's what I'd like to see. Okay. My name is Glenn Griffin. I'm the e-marketing manager with APHA. And one of the parts of my responsibility was to help manage our social media efforts. And I'll walk you through some of the things we've been doing for those of you who are not quite as active as the others. And first, I have no conflicts. I do work for APHA. These are our goals. We're looking to expand the communication for the organization out to its members and out into the public health community as a whole and get people involved in the programs that we're putting together. But we're also looking to create a spot where we can generate a conversation, not just between you and us, but also between all you as members and even non-members. And lastly, we also want to talk to those non-members, introduce them to APHA, what are we all about, and why they should come in and help build an even bigger and better organization. We've been at this for, I would say, 4 years. Slowly moving, you know, a little bit deeper into what you can think of as a continuum of how of social media. We started small. We started with some of the more simple things that don't take as much effort from you as an organization. Buttons and widgets. We had RSS feeds. We posted on other people's sites, and then we began to launch our own sites, one at a time, slowly over time, to make sure that we could handle it and we could support it and we can keep it going. And lately, that's where most of our effort is, building these communities down in the more engagement end of things, not just pushing out information, but really and truly starting to make those communities almost live on their own, where we have enough people involved with enough comments that they would like to say and add to the group, where the group takes on a life of its own. And that takes a bit to get to. And these are the spots where we've established them. We have Facebook and Twitter and Flickr and LinkedIn. YouTube, and even our newest addition is Foursquare, that we just, for this meeting, is the first time that we've actually gotten actively involved in it. But to do all this can take an awful lot of effort, and just building it doesn't make it grow on its own. You know, the classic, if you build it, will they come? Well, we actually found out, no, they won't. It took us quite some time to get some size behind these groups. So you'll see several years where we just slowly crawled along. But in the last 6-8 months, we've seen a lot of great success. And for anyone who's following Twitter at this meeting, Twitter's leading it for us. If you're watching the hashtag APHA10, please watch it, please follow it, and go ahead and let us know what you're thinking. We've seen some great growth in the last 6-8 months, but it's taken a lot of effort. We've had to cross-promote across all of our different channels. You can't just let it sit there. You really need to put in some effort to let people know that it's there, both online and offline, in events like this. We have much higher exposure at this meeting than we did last year to let you know that we are here and there are these options for you to get engaged in. But once you get people there, it's not over there either. You can't just let them sign up and come in and then that's it. It takes a lot of work to make them not just watch, but to actually take that next step to get involved. And these are some simple stats on using Facebook as an example. How active the people are. Back in June, we only had slightly under 10% of the people who were part of the group that were actually taking an action. And we're seeing this nice steady growth upwards. And that's a metric we watch because it tells us, are people excited about the group? Are people interested in what's going on? And the more we can do to foster that, I think it creates a better experience for everybody that's part of the group. We do that in a variety of ways. We took a real step back and we said, what can we do at this phase of these groups to engage people, because they might not just do it on their own. So we plan out a calendar of postings that we're going to put out there. Some straight information, just what the organization is doing. Others that are clearly designed to say, to elicit a response from people. We might put out there a topic that's a little bit controversial to get people talking about it and maybe even arguing about it. But that's good. It's healthy for the community. It's a little nerve-wracking at times when you are not sure what people are going to say, But I think people are recognize you're going to see different opinions out there, and we as an organization know that those opinions make us all stronger. And we also try very hard to speak in the language of the audience on that platform. We can't just put stuff out there in generic APHA speak. It's got to be in the language of the platform. So Twitter is very different than LinkedIn, is very different than from Facebook. So we try to recognize that about each of the communities and speak in that language. Just to give you a couple examples of some of the things we've done, this is a campaign where we tried very hard to integrate across multiple platforms, both online and off. This is for a Get Ready campaign for emergency preparedness. We produced a video, posted on YouTube, and also on our website. And actively on the website, I don't know if everyone can read that, but we gave spots where people can download or embed the video so they can take it and use it in their campaigns as well. We also made it very easy for them to share it on their social media platforms. So at the bottom there was a pop-up screen that gave them a lot of different choices on how to share it. And it made it, the viral aspect of this campaign was very strong because of that. We also promoted it widely across everything that we do. Postings on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. We did email campaigns. We put it on the APHA website, and we did all the traditional media outreach as well. We also developed a blog specifically for this campaign. So we put the video on the blog to an established audience that was interested in prevention. Another thing we did, which many of you might have seen mentioned in the opening session, was create a video where we integrated the video itself with Facebook. So this was the launch page. I didn't want to show the whole video in this meeting, but the way we did this is these photos that you see on this web page are actually pulled off of people's Facebook accounts. So you could have come to this landing page and actually seen somebody that you know. And everybody who clicked on the blue Facebook button and giving us permission to access their Facebook account, as they watched the actual video, the photos in the video were populated with their friends' photos and photos that they may have uploaded onto their video account or Facebook account. So a real fun way to use Facebook and its networking applications and put it into a video that can be very personalized. They could also watch it without doing that if that made them uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, why are we doing all this? Yes, it's to create a community where members of APHA have a great place to go to interact with like members. But also, we want to bring them back to APHA programs. And we've begun to see some good success at that as well. This is a measure of off of the various social media platforms that we use, how often are we getting people to come back onto an APHA website of one form or another and taking part in a campaign? And they're doing it. They're coming and signing pledges and sending letters to Congress, downloading reports, and even purchasing books. So we're starting to see that as more and more people get on the platforms and get more and more engaged, it's becoming successful in off-platform ways as well. And not to be shy to plug what we're doing here at the meeting, here's all the things we have going on to help your enjoyment of the annual meeting. We have a Twitter at twitter.com, APHA annual meeting. Use the hashtag /APHA10, and you can follow everything that's going on. We have a daily blog that tells you synopses of everything that's gone on for that day, so definitely check that out. And our newest platform is Foursquare. I don't know how many people know about Foursquare, but we've identified these areas, and this session being one of them, where you can check in using Foursquare to win prizes. So if you've got a Foursquare account, check in, and we'll see who can win. Also, we have a social media booth if you want to come and just talk about what you're doing and what we're doing and sign up for some of the different platforms that we have. Come see me. It's down in the Mix and Mingle Lounge. Okay.
Great. Well, let's thank the panel once again, everybody, for their absolute hard, terrific work. So given that this is a social media session and social media is about the social, before we turn the microphone over to all of you, I'm going to invite you to take about a minute to 2 minutes and turn to the person next to you and share a comment or two about the session and talk a little bit about what some of the questions are that you might want answered by the panel. And then we'll turn the microphone over to you and you can address questions to the panel, and we may even engage in a little crowdsourcing. If the panel can't answer the questions, one of you may have the answer, and if that's the case, I may look to the crowd for some enhancements. So why don't you take a minute or two and just comment to one another about what you learned and what you'd like to know more about. Okay, community, let's chat with our team. Isn't social networking just wonderful? You get to talk to each other, share ideas. Okay, we have a microphone in the center of the room. Watch it go loop it, please. Would you mind using the microphone just so everybody can hear you? Please, please. Bachigalupi has been tweeting through the whole session. We've been following your
So the question I have is, it's very, it's for everybody there, is for what is the FEDS or our organization tends to think about this stuff from zero. That is, inventing everything rather than asking other folks who can reach 200,000 followers very easily. 200,000 followers is nothing in social media. So, I can get 200,000 in a couple of days. I mean, so the question is, why, I'm being controversial here, I want to be controversial. Why is it that if connecting is the core piece, why is it that there's a difficulty on connecting with those who've been doing this for quite some time? And I say this because you were surprised that you didn't get negative comments. That's not surprising at all.
Thanks for the question. I think the best way to answer it, it's about credibility and branding and identity. So for many, many years, the CDC brand has, it says something to our consumers. And by that, and because we are the federal government and we have to be responsible, we also have to be cautious on partnerships and what partnerships. And by partnering with certain partnerships or just a third party, we have to also be concerned on their partnerships. So it's not that we're reinventing the wheel, because actually we didn't create Twitter. And in terms of resources, it's not heavy in resources as much as it is staff time and managing it. So in terms of why aren't we connecting with all and every partner, we have to be very, very, very careful on who and how we partner. And like I stated earlier, we're tiptoeing into social media. There are new policies that are being created that as government employees and government agencies, we are just not able to be cutting edge like every partner organization or nonprofit or community-based organization. So that's just kind of the red tape that we live in. And it seems to be, I'll just leave it at that.
That was a great answer. I think the policy issue comes up in local health departments, federal, state, others. So it's one of a big threshold, I think, for all of us, is how do we move through policy to use some of the practices that really work. Thank you. That was a great response. Please, sir.
Well, I'm Gary Goldman. I'm a Snohomish Health District in Washington State, just north of Seattle. First of all, a moderate-sized local health jurisdiction. I'm struggling with how personally to engage with all these new strategies for connecting, especially since I feel already overwhelmed. Disclaimer, I'm 58 years old. My kids know how to tweet and everything else. And I've got a Facebook account, but I don't update it. It strikes me that these are wonderful tools, as you said, for connecting, for sharing. It's not clear to me that that's what I'm going to be comfortable doing. So how do we start to tease apart where we really belong in this milieu? Here's the concrete example. I'm already overwhelmed by my 80 emails a day. I need to respond to them. I'm already overwhelmed by staff needing to see me, have a conversation with me, one-on-one, live bodies present. I'm already overwhelmed with all of those things. How can I now fit in to this environment all these other tools? I mean, Facebook. I'm the face of my agency. I already give talks to the Kiwanis and the Rotaries and the superintendents of the schools and things like that. But I'm being told, you know, you really ought to be out there with Facebook and such. And you've already acknowledged it takes time and energy to maintain. Not a good idea to get out there and die.
Just to clarify for the panel, do you want that answer from a personal perspective or an organizational perspective?
Both.
Okay. Somebody want to take that? Okay, please.
I've worked with a lot of nonprofits that are really small, so this is a common thing. One of the nonprofits I worked with had 2 paid staff. So how are they supposed to, just exactly what you said. This is a great place to engage your supporters to do your social media. It's a volunteer opportunity that you can help them with, but you're not having to dedicate the time day in and day out. So if you work with your staff to create a content calendar, and then you can cultivate some of your board members, high-level volunteers, people that have worked with your organization in the past that you know are really passionate about what you're doing, they can be the ones out there tweeting and Facebooking and getting those other people engaged that way. So it doesn't have to come from you personally. This is from the organizational perspective. But there are other people that would be happy to do this. I do this for nonprofits or people that aren't causes that I support, and I do it for free. So that's the kind of opportunities that you can look at from a volunteer perspective. From a personal perspective, I'm pretty stingy on my personal Facebook. I only have, I think, 72 friends because I won't friend people that I don't know in real life. So that's, well, I have a professional page, that's something totally different, but my personal page, I use it really to connect to people that I already have relationships with. So it's not an idea of, I have to engage them. I mean, we already meet for coffee every Thursday. So it's not the same kind of thing as from an organizational perspective.
I would just build a little bit on the organizational side there, which is if you're going to try to put yourself out as the face of the organization, you can choose to do it in 2 ways. You can do it personally as you, or you can also do it just as the name of the organization. which is what we tend to do a little more on APHA's side. And what that allows you to do is, yes, you can get more people involved, and you can even piecemeal it out. I mean, I think we've managed to, with none of us fully dedicated to social media, we've enabled, you know, everybody to do little bits and pieces of it using the work they're already doing as, you know, their daytime job. And you can repurpose some of it and very easily generate it into this, and you put it all together, and now all of a sudden you've got a lot of work going out the door. And it doesn't overwhelm either you personally or the organization as a whole.
And a couple, one or two very quick comments on that. I think one is form follows function. Like anything that you would build, if you don't know exactly why you're doing certain social media activities, either for yourself or your organization, don't do them until you know. And the second part is to really consider the idea between personal and professional boundaries. And even if you're a manager in an organization, I can't tell you how many times I've walked into organizations where when the intern left, so did the password to their Twitter account, so did the password to their Facebook account, and the intern's nowhere to be found. That's not something that you turn over, because people change over. So the degree to which the social media activities of the organization transcend individuals, that's really important to consider in the sustainability. That's a great question, I'm sure relevant to many people here. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Lena Hong, and I just became a communication journalist for the Asia Pacific Island Caucus. And that means I get to do all the fringe stuff that you're doing, but of course I am happy to do what I do. So I was really glad to kind of walk in here on your Twitter town hall, because I'm the kind of person that organizes the women's town hall, you know, with access to women, but don't quite know how to do it on Twitter. So one, I'm thanking you for your assistance, and I'd love to partner with you over the coming year, and definitely take it up on your offer. Let me give you a concrete example of something that I kind of wanted to put in place in order to kind of scale up, and I wasn't able to do it, maybe have a solution for it. And that is, I was very concerned about the Affordable Care Act and the successful implementation of it. We're very, very good at making sure that word got out on what the Affordable Care Act meant for me and my community in English and Spanish, but it was the end for African American communities, but it was not being done in culture or in language for the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander community. So I worked with the Asian Pacific American Medical Student Association as a nonprofit organization to make sure that we got a 10-minute YouTube done, as well as a 2-minute YouTube done on what the Affordable Care Act means to that particular community, using leadership at the national level for nonprofit organizations, and even Dr. Rob, who's on the AMA Board of Trustees, on that. And then we did a 2-minute video on the benefits of the Affordable Care Act to Asian Americans, specifically how to use healthcare.gov. And so I actually mentioned this to Dr. Coe yesterday, and he really liked the idea of what I did, but I didn't really want to get it out there on Facebook. And my original goal was to get it out on 9/23, which is the 6-month anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, but I missed that deadline because it was the death of my family. And by the time I finished the video and it was ready to upload, it was GOTV weekend. Not time to be getting it aired on a PSA. So I kind of went underground because I frankly didn't have any money to go against our road. And I just used my Facebook account, and I wrote an article in the American Chronicle, an op-ed piece. And I got maybe 1,000, you know, hits on it. And now I want you to help me scale it. And my goal was actually to have kind of an iPhone app where we can actually have a kind of like a, well, what was called a jukebox back in the days, where you could kind of go, I want to hear Yul Kwan, but I want to hear him in Korean or Thai or whatever, and you have to click a button. Can you help me?
Can you state a really specific question that you'd like the panel to address?
How could you help me scale that?
Take it to scale.
Meaning, take it past 1,000 and up it. You don't have to hit a $250,000.
Okay, Melissa, do you want to address that, or do you want somebody else would like
yeah.
to take it?
I'm going to leave the Facebook thing to Jessica or Lena.
Well, let me take a quick shot while you guys are thinking of the answer to that, okay? Well, what you're really talking about is digital marketing, which is a little different than social networking, because the idea, if you're really going to take this to scale, is to look at where these folks already are. So if there are certain websites that people are visiting, if there are certain social networks that they're already part of, this is a great time to drive in by reaching those networks, by establishing cross links, by posting the word on those blogs. Go where the people are. It doesn't have to be through the social network channel, and drive them into the social network channel from where they already are. So a really great exercise is to just take a big piece of white paper, draw a map, and say, where are these folks online now? What websites do they inhabit? Where are they offline? Draw a little social ecology, then go and talk to them and bring them in, rather than try to push through a channel that's already maybe not producing for you. Any other thoughts on that? All right, okay.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Please.
I
one of the case studies that I did in preparation for this presentation was with the Colorado Health Foundation, and they had sort of the same fear. Not that their policies forbid them from having comments, but it was this fear of what's going to happen when we go out there, and we're going to have negative comments, and people are going to say bad things, and that sort of drives that impulse to shut down the conversation. And the way that they handle it is, I think, a really good case study in how to handle it. You have to be really thoughtful in your presentation to them about why you need this and how you're going to stem those fears, what you're going to do in order to allow people to communicate but control the outbreak of possible negativity. And one of the ways you can do that is by looking at the way other organizations have done it and show that to the county to say, here's what Colorado Health Foundation did. Here's what their responses were. Otherwise, it's a hard battle. We had this at MGMA where my job is social media, but corporate policy was I was not allowed to access Facebook or Twitter. So it was challenging to do my job for a while until they realized that if you want to be involved in these avenues, you have to use them the way they're meant to be used.
That may sound like a comment, please.
I think Jessica said everything, but the only thing I was going to mention is depending upon what your target audience is and what you're basically trying to communicate, and if you're having barriers right now reaching them and the traditional methods aren't working, then there's tons and tons of research out there about social media and the effectiveness of it. So even with CDC recently, with H1N1, it was pretty heavily, social media was used pretty heavily used to inform the public on the status of H1N1, same thing with flu. And so if you want any information on some of the stuff that CDC has done to help build your case, we'll be more than happy to share that. I don't know it all offhand, but I can steer you to the right direction.
I think there's two other things you can do as well. One is, you know, obviously try to get yourself involved in the policy committee, because sometimes that policy stuff is just going to take time to process, and you're not going to get through the county and the county commissioners and everybody else. But one really creative solution that a couple of health departments have done is, if you're working with HIV/AIDS Coalition or something like that, don't get all the interchange on your site. Build a microsite. I mean, you can knock out a WordPress site in a couple of days. Host it with the coalition. It's just outside. It's still in the family, but it's outside the county parameters, and you can also make it cooler, plain speaker, more engaging, comment in a more real-life way, and you're still honoring the county and the coalition, but you're really not trying to climb a mountain that's too high. Other questions for the panel? Ideas, please. Great insight from the crowd. Anybody else want to share something? Even if you don't have a question, you want to share something? Oh, we got one coming up.
Absolutely. Because I'm very long-winded, I didn't get to that part of my presentation, but if you have access to the handout, it's on there. Two local organizations that I interviewed as case studies that really did this well. One was the Colorado Health Foundation, and they're a grant-making organization, so it's a little bit different maybe from some of the work that you're doing, but there's still lessons to be learned there. And the other one is the Colorado Children's Immunization Coalition. They were fabulous, and their blog, their Twitter, and their Facebook and YouTube efforts. And they're really a case study in going out and studying your supporters and going to where your supporters are. Particularly for CCIC, one of their goals is they wanted to be seen as an authority on the internet. As I'm sure you're all aware, with vaccination, there's so much stuff on the internet. And they wanted to be a resource for parents. So part of that was going to where parents were already talking about it. And so they're a great case study in how to do that. Other people that are just really smart that you should probably follow on Twitter, Beth Cantor from Zoetica, really good. She really knows what she's doing, and she works a lot with nonprofits. And of course, my lovely panel associates here are also very good people to follow.
We're CDC NPIN on Twitter, if you'd like to follow us.
And I'm Colorado Jess, so it's pretty easy.
Share your Twitter handle?
Well, yeah,
and you put me on the spot that I do not have a Twitter.
And mine is Mark M. Worldways, so you can go there. The other really interesting case, there are a couple, and those of you that want to tweet it or ask it, we can probably, among all of us, put some more cases together. So I might encourage you, if you want to get yourself a Twitter account and tweet any one of us, we can put some references together. But it's really interesting to watch what's happening with I2Y, I'm Too Young. It's a cancer group for people that have been diagnosed with cancer at a very early age. What's really fascinating about that is it's one of very few that has become as much of an offline community as an online community, and is a really interesting example of things that haven't just stayed in one channel of communications. Karen.
Hi, this has been a great session, and I found out about it from APHA10 hashtag, so it's great. You know, I didn't see the schedule, so it's really great, so I've been following all day long. So you guys are just great. One of the things I was really impressed, so many people don't know how to abbreviate things. We had a discussion in our room, and this is kind of, that intimidates people, and when one of you mentioned canned tweets, you know, preparing, it's like, that goes out the window. Q&A, it's now tweet-a-name, and it's kind of, that is a really wonderful way to, I mean, I just imagine going back and comparing tweet-TNA sheets for everybody,
We're looking at
you that on it already. But I think that abbreviation and texting intimidates a lot of people, and, I've been working on it, but a lot of people have a hard time with it, and they don't know how to do it, it's a lot to juggle. And the other thing is linking to your Facebook, your tweets to your Facebook. And a lot of people don't know about all these behind-the-scenes tools, so they go in and manually do it all. So I hear them all say, how do you coordinate it all? So I think a good Twitter usage toolkit is needed. And it would be great to, I have to work with you guys on it.
OMG, great comment. Bachloop's going to have a comment in a minute, but anybody want to address that? I think it's great commentary.
I was going to say, I need to give a credit to AIDS.gov, @AIDS.gov. They have really awesome tools on their website. They were a fabulous partner for us in the town hall, and they've already developed a lot of that stuff. So before anybody, tries to try something, you can follow @AIDS.gov or just AIDS.gov on their website. You'll see it.
Bachloop, please.
Actually, CDC has just published
Yeah.
I just want to say something that's been repeated over and over again. The demographics of Twitter is not the youngest. And it's not the youngest. People hear every time someone want to be white, somebody says, well, the young are young, but it's not true. The point is, if you don't care about using social media, it's not the youngest who are the more active, who are the more credible, etc., etc. That's the myth. Mm-hmm. Actually, to do these things well, you need high level literacy. But that's the myth. I think we need to stop saying those things that we've been saying a lot, but they're not true. Facebook profile, actually old.
Yeah. That's just a really good comment, Bachloop. I think that this whole idea that you need to monitor the demographics more so. Any of you that are epidemiologists, public health people, educators. The demographics of this are shifting extraordinarily rapidly in almost the time that studies are published. It's great to follow a lot of Pew's data, the Pew Internet study that's built into the Pew study of family life. They're pretty current, and you can find out a lot about demographics. The other thing is this age side. I was just with a group of people that are building this amazing web platform for people 65 to 80, and it's amazing what people 65 to 80 want a platform to do. It might surprise you. Please.
Hi, I have multiple personalities, so I'm...
We don't do that here, but that's okay.
I'm a health policy group, and I'm also a crisis members. And to amplify one of my favorite people's points, the fastest growing, and with sympathy for your concern about trying to keep up, the fastest growing demographic on social media is women over 50. Yeah. And I think it's a wonderful platform to engage people of all ages and all communities, but to move past the anxiety to this wonderful realm of community. I'd also commend people who may not already be participating to participate in a weekly online meeting called Healthcare Social Media, HTSM hashtag, and it is one of the fastest hours of the week and wonderful place to start to get to know people. If you don't want to sign on Twitter, just type it into Google. It will often go faster than you have a chance to read.
Sunday,
yes. Just check the hashtag for your time zone.
Excellent. That's great.
More comments or questions?
HCSM, just hashtag HCSM for Healthcare Social Media.
That's great. Any other questions or comments? Well, seeing none, let's thank ourselves and thank the panel. That's great.